Many people have a desire to enter the world of investing, whether it be through real estate, stocks, or entrepreneurship. However, people often face self-doubt, a limited belief system, or simply a lack of knowledge to put behind their ambition. It's easier than you think to overcome these obstacles if you know exactly what's holding you back. Partner with Andre to forge new neurological pathways that unlock breakthrough strategies for income generation, reshape your belief systems, and construct your desired life. With over 15 years of experience in finance and a decade devoted to teaching wealth preservation, these achievements are no mere coincidence. One thing is clear, if others have done it, you can too. Start your complimentary action plan today at www.andrestewartauthor.com. Welcome to the Investing Uncensored podcast. If you've been searching for ways to break free from the 9-to-5 grind, scale or start your own business, generate passive income, or gain insights from others who have achieved their desired lifestyle, get ready. Prepare to be inspired as we provide you with invaluable tips, resources, and firsthand experiences from Andre and other industry experts who have accomplished remarkable things in their respective fields. This is the Investing Uncensored podcast, your roadmap to success. And now here's your host, Andre Stewart.
Welcome to Investing Uncensored. I'm your host, Andre Stewart. And today we're bringing a great guest. He was in real estate years ago, got out, and now he's back in it for the last couple of years. And he has some great insight that he's going to bring to us. We also have a mutual connection, which we're going to talk about as far as multifamily goes. So I'm looking forward to talking to Scott. Scott Smith, how are you doing, sir?
I'm great, Andre. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for coming on. We talked earlier. We just dove into a little bit about your background and my background, but let everyone know how you got into investing in real estate and touch on your background in mortgage, because I'm also a lender. So touch on your background in mortgage lending. And then what made you transition into being a real estate investor and doing wholesale deals like you're doing right now?
Yeah. So back in the early 2000s, I used to work for MCI, fantastic phone company that's no longer in business. They don't do that anymore. They had amazing sales training. And a buddy of mine, when MCI was going out of business, said that he had gotten into mortgages and he showed me a $10,000 check from a deal that he closed. And that was pretty much all anybody had to tell me. So I went and got a job with a company called AmeriQuest. Some people will remember them. Some people won't. They were a very shady mortgage company. They taught me everything not to do. And I bounced around to a few different mortgage companies and opened up my own. Ran a small company for 3 or 4 years. We did mortgages. We did small business financing. Everything really shut down after, you know, the 08-09 crash. Went back into, you know, just corporate America, did that for a few years and had an opportunity in 2017 to get my real estate license, jumped on it and have never looked back.
So you were a part of that. I guess it was not you, but it was predatory lending going on back then in 08. Like, you know, it was crazy.
I appreciate you saying not me, but I mean, look, I wear that. I mean, I was part of the problem, right? Like there was the wild, wild west. There were no rules back then.
Hey, tell the truth, you know? And it was no rules. I mean, that's when the regulation came about. So you weren't doing anything that you couldn't do, right? I mean, it was all legal at that point in time, right? So I had just got into Wells Fargo and, you know, Wachovia owned Countrywide. And Countrywide was the main culprit in what happened with that collapse because they were going heavy with the predatory lending. So let me ask you this, because you were in that, do you see any similarities between 2008 and 2023 with the real estate market?
So it's interesting. People talk about that a lot, but there are a few similarities, but not really. If you go back to, you know, if you go back to 08, the environment was really a glut of inventory, just more houses than you could ever deal with, probably in the 40,000 plus range here in the Colorado area on the market. Mm-hmm. So you just had a ton of inventory. You had banks encouraging stated income, stated asset loans. So as a lender, I mean, they told us, look, we don't want to see income. We don't want to see assets. Right. Just send us the person's credit profile and we'll make a decision based on that. And so you had a lot of that being led by the banks and by the account executives at the banks to really drive those loans where people, maybe they qualified, maybe they didn't, and you had very little regulation where lenders could kind of do what they wanted to do. Right now, we're heavily regulated from the lending side. Banks are very cautious about who they loan money to, although you are starting to see some non-QM loans coming back in with those stated income, stated assets, but still not in the number that was. And plus, we have very low inventory right now. Mm-hmm. Denver's got about 6,000 properties on the market. So we're still in a very heavy seller's market. So I don't know where all of the inventory would have to come from to put us upside down in the real estate market, even though interest rates are a little bit higher, although they are very similar to what they were in 08. I mean, they're, that 5-7% range. There's just not enough inventory to really drive a crash. And the difference is most people were underwater in their homes in 08, where today most people have 30-40% equity because of how much prices have gone up. And a lot of people are in very low payments based on very low interest rates that they got 3, 4, 5 years ago. So most people are in a pretty comfortable position in their home. So I think there would have to be some unknown factors that really hit the market to be able to cause something similar to 08. And I don't know where that would come from.
I'm a lender too. And so I'm experiencing two sides of it, right? I flip as well. And so I'm seeing that prices are starting to drop. And I think the inventory thing that people are talking about is going to be market specific, right? Some markets are going to have more inventory than others. But I'm also seeing the ability for people to purchase, because the even though someone might have a lot of equity in their home, like I had to decrease the price on ours $30,000 just to make it affordable, right? So that buying pool gets smaller versus back then. I think the homes they're kind of similar in price to where they are now. But I think the amount of income is different, right? So I think from my experience, I'm just seeing people not being able to afford a house over a certain amount, and the prices are starting to decline. So that's the only thing that I think can happen in some kind of black swan event in the credit market, because even credit is tightening. A lot of people can't get, because they raised the minimum. So it used to be like a 660, then it went to a 680. So for you to be able to get a long-term loan with a decent LTV, it's seeming a little bit harder. So I think the same people that are trying to refinance out, if they need to pull out that cash, because savings are at an all-time low. So people don't have the money that they had before. So I think there's just going to be a couple of different factors. It's not going to be the same way as it was before, but I do think we'll see some sort of correction. I don't think we're going to have a collapse. Like, that was just crazy. And it was like, I think 5 million homes in a short amount of time or something crazy like that.
Something like that.
So I don't think that'll happen again, but I do think there'll be a correction. To your point, like, you know what I mean? It won't be like that, what they're saying, but I think something will happen.
You know what? As a real estate agent, if a home sells for $300,000 or it sells for $500,000, it's not a negative to me, right? Mm-hmm. Like I make less commission, but mm-hmm. I still do fine, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's not an end of the world. And I do think, Denver's a unique market just because we tend to have a lot of people moving here, and it definitely has slowed down over the last 2 years, but we tend to have a lot of people moving here from Texas and California and New York, people trying to get away from some of the regulation. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, because that slowed down, you're starting to see as prices come down, and hopefully once fingers crossed, interest rates drop a little bit next year, you're going to see some people who are local to Denver who were priced out of the market, maybe able to actually get back into the market, which would be a nice switch.
I agree with that. I think that's going to happen. Like I've been saying, rates are going to drop. They're taking a lot longer than I thought, but I think they are going to bring the rates down, and then people are going to jump back in. You know what I mean? Because that's what I'm waiting on. Like, you know what I mean? I think it's, we're selling the last house that we have, and then I'm going to wait for a couple more months to see, you know what I mean? Because a lot of these houses, especially I'm looking in Arizona, I was looking at a house that was $149,000 or $150,000. Almost 8 months later, it was at like $325,000. So that's obviously not the actual value for that property. So I'm going to just wait a little bit before I jump back in. You know what I mean? Or foreclosures have ticked up. So that's something that I've seen increase in that. I think, for my strategy, something that I'll probably take advantage of versus going full on flip. So you on the wholesale side, I know you told me you like wholesaling. How do you find properties? Because a lot of properties we get our wholesalers, like the property that I did get, I got it for $162,000 and it was worth $315,000 after rehab. So do you find properties like that? And if so, how do you find it as a wholesaler?
Yeah. So, I mean, we do cold calling. There's a few lead sources that we use. And then, I mean, we just have a few different marketing channels. I like wholesaling because it insulates you from ever having to own the house.
Yep.
So you're not, you know, I like to do a fix and flip. And if I run into a really good deal and it makes sense to do the flip, but if I wholesale it, I can make $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 as opposed to, you know, maybe I don't make the $40,000 or $50,000, but I also have no exposure at all. Mm-hmm. And I never actually own the property. So I love, and Colorado is very open-minded. They, you know, I know some states you've got to be a licensed real estate agent or they don't like wholesaling. Colorado is not that way. And then we also do novations or joint ventures where sometimes I'll run into a property where, for instance, I had a property where a seller's just trying to get out of it. Like she just needs out of her property, but there wasn't enough room for a fix and flip and no investor was going to come in and buy it. So basically I go into a joint venture with the seller and I say, look, if your bottom line is $290,000, I'll get you your $290,000. And you're good. She's like, yep, you get me my $290,000. I'm good, Scott. So then I put it on the market as basically similar to a net listing. And I listed on the market for $335,000. Mm-hmm. We ended up going under contract for $345,000. And so we end up making that difference between $290,000 and $345,000. Mm-hmm. And so it's similar to a wholesale deal. We're just accessing the retail market. And now retail and the property is worth like $390,000, $400,000. So a retail buyer is getting a great deal on the property. I'm making really good money. The seller's getting exactly what they want. It's all disclosed. Everybody's happy. And it's a, you know, it's a win all around.
Can you explain the novation a little bit in detail? Like break that down again, because some people might not know what a novation is. And it's funny because me and my friend, he does deals. He's an agent and he's always about talking about doing novations with wholesalers. So explain that really quick.
Yeah, absolutely. You have, and I will say this caveat, they are not legal in all states. You Correct. Need to be very careful and you need to understand the laws in whatever state you're doing business in. Like I know they're not legal in Florida and they may not be legal in a few other states. So you definitely want to check those state laws, but it's very similar to a wholesale deal. You're just accessing the retail market. So you get the home under contract for X dollars, and we'll use the example. So you and the seller make a deal for $290,000, right? Mm-hmm. In these situations, I normally test the wholesale market and I'm getting rejected from the wholesale market. The wholesale market's saying, you know what, Scott, at 290, I don't want to do that deal. We would need to do the deal at 260 in order for it to make sense. Well, we can't do this deal at 260 because the seller has to have 290 to do payoffs and stuff, right? So it really eliminates that investor side of the market. There's just not enough room there. Mm-hmm. And so what we then do is list the property naturally on the MLS and look for a retail buyer who's willing to do the work. They know they're buying the property as is. And so we list it at still a profit for me, still getting the seller what they want and listing it at a deal for the retail buyer. And now all of a sudden everybody's winning when the property closes. And there's some paperwork you want to put in place. I would tell you that, you know, you need to draft your joint venture agreement. You need to have it notarized. I would not just have regular signatures on this because where there's understanding, there can be no misunderstanding. Mm-hmm. And you want to make sure that the seller knows exactly what is going on. This is not a time to like do something, try to be crafty, right? You want to over disclose because you don't want the seller to feel like they're getting some type of raw deal. So, you just tell them, look, we can't get investors to bite at this price, but I do have another way. Basically, what we could do is open it up to retail buyers. You're still going to get your 290. You're good with your 290. Yep, I'm good with my 290. And then you're able to take that out to the retail market and be able to get that under contract at a higher price. You're going to make money. The seller's going to get their net. And then the retail buyer gets a great deal.
So in order to do the novation, my friend's an agent as well. You have to be a real estate agent?
You have to partner with a real estate agent because the whole point is to get it on the MLS, to get it more exposed to retail. I mean, I guess you could do it as a for sale by owner, but you're kind of missing out on exposure. The most valuable piece of it, which is the access to the MLS.
Correct. Interesting. So then you guys just do a joint venture agreement with the seller, and then you would do a assignment to the, you can't assign it to the agent. So how would you do that?
There is no assignment. You're just doing a standard listing agreement, and you're putting in the additional provisions of the listing agreement that the listing agreement is under the purview of the joint venture agreement. So you're linking those two documents.
Okay. So you're linking those two documents. So, but in essence, the person selling the house has to list it with the agent, and then you just have a joint venture contract with that seller.
That's right. And because I'm the agent, it makes it really easy.
Yeah, you're good. But I'm just thinking for like people that aren't agents, that would be
the way
to go.
Yeah, you need to partner with an agent. You need to find an agent to partner with.
Okay. So then they would make the connection, and then you just have to make sure, like you said, contracts and understanding that.
Yes.
So does this money get sent to you at closing if you do this joint venture? But you're the agent. So in your case, you're fine.
So it gets paid as a marketing fee from the title company direct to my LLC.
That's what I was going to say. So then the same thing would be the case, because the agent can write that in the contract, marketing fee.
That's correct.
Okay. So it works out. So that's pretty simple, guys. Just if you find a deal that way. And I always say you guys are partnering with an agent anyway. Get an agent. As many as possible, right, that are savvy in what you're trying to do. I like dealing with REO agents. So when I look up agents online to work with, I look for REO, short sale type of specialists. Is that what your title is? Or you just have just regular real estate agent? Because, you know, you can Google people, and you know what I mean?
No, I have the short sale and foreclosure designation.
Okay.
I don't do a lot of short sales.
Mm-hmm.
It's short sales are a lot of work, honestly. Mm-hmm. And there's easier deals out there. But yeah, I mean, I went through the class to be a short sale. I think it's SRS, one of those. But yeah, I'm definitely designated for short sales and foreclosures. And it's good information to have. And I did a lot of we did do a lot more short sales back in, you know, 06, 07. Mm-hmm. I was more heavily involved in those from a lending perspective.
But see, what I was explaining to them is that you know this, right? So most of the time, if you do get a short sale agent or the one that has a designation, they're going to know a lot about real estate investing or this side of what we're talking about. If you get a regular agent who doesn't have those designations, the likelihood of them knowing what you just said, to me, is very slim. Just from my experience.
Absolutely.
If you get a regular agent, they're going to be like, I don't understand what that means, or they're just not, I just want to do that. So if you look for someone, they don't have to be doing short sales, but if they have that designation, what are the designations that someone look for when they are searching for an agent that has your qualifications?
Yeah. So you want somebody that is an accredited buyer's representative. You want somebody that is an accredited seller's representative. Relocation are, you know, really good designations, because you want people that deal with processes that are out of the norm, right?
Correct.
You want them in. You know, I would tell you that if you're just going to buy your casual house, do you need to spend a ton of time interviewing your agent? No. Those, you know, you look for someone that's done a good amount of volume. But if you're investing, you need to spend some time looking for an agent that is investor friendly, preferably somebody that does currently own or has owned investment properties.
Mm-hmm.
If you're interviewing your agent and they've never owned or they don't currently own an investment property,
yeah,
I would not use them as an investor. I would walk away because they're, you know, you got to think the average real estate agent does 3 or 4 deals a year. Even if you span that across a 10-year period, that's 30 or 40 deals. Well, I do 30 or 40 deals a year, right?
Exactly.
Like in the current market.
Yeah.
And when you're, you know, people think that real estate stays the same over time. The markets change quarter to quarter.
Mm-hmm.
So if you did one deal last quarter and one deal this quarter, and you're going to do one deal next quarter, you really don't understand the market, the clauses you should be using. You don't understand the negotiation tactics you should be using. You're out of the loop. And so what you really want to make sure is you're getting an agent who is in the loop and understands all of the pieces and parts of the current market, as opposed to, you know, I've been in the business 30 years and there, you know, and I still use map books, right? Like, that's not the agent you want to gravitate towards.
Ever wished you had the opportunity to buy a stock like Facebook, Amazon, or Netflix before it went public or was able to get shares in companies like VC firms and angel investors? Well, here's your chance. Go to investfar.com/invest and reserve a position. For the next 1 to 3 months, InvestFAR is allowed a limited number of low-cost shares be available for friends, family, and its community per SEC regulations before it goes public. Imagine being able to 1,000x or 10,000x your investment, like the top 5%. With exclusive opportunities such as this, positions are limited and the window of time is short. Don't miss your chance. That's INV, as in Victor, estfar.com/invest.
I mean, in the benefit of just having an agent like yourself, you know, you can sell a house, right? A regular house, a traditional house. That's easy for you at this point in time. So it just wouldn't even make sense if you're an investor to get a traditional agent, because an agent like you that has the designations, they can sell a traditional house too. Like, just list it, put it on the market, boom, that's it.
Do it all the time. Yep.
Yeah. So, and it's like my friend that's an agent, he gets listings all the time. He still focuses on investing as an agent. But if someone says, hey, I need you to list my house, he's not going to say no. You know what I mean? Because that's, in essence, when you put on the MLS, the buyer's agent, that's their job to go and look for the house that this person's trying to buy. Your job as a selling agent is to get it listed and then make sure that it's fine, right, for the buyer.
And I do it all. Like, I own a brokerage. I've got around 13 agents that work with me. I constantly mentor and train them, but I am also, I'm in the field all of the time. So to give you an idea, in the month of August, I drove 3,800 miles in the basically between Denver and Colorado Springs, right? Mm-hmm. And I say it all the time, but I don't turn anything down but my collar. I had a client who, you know, they want to buy a $200,000 house in Pueblo. Pueblo's 2.5 hours, 3 hours south of me. Mm-hmm. I got in my car and drove down there. And I, you know, most brokerage owners would not do that. They would hand that off to another agent. They would, but I know if I don't continually do business that I'm going to be out of the loop. And then my agents are going to come to me and be like, hey, Scott, can you help me? I'm doing this deal in Pueblo. And I'm like, oh, I don't know anything about Pueblo. Well, I need to know something about Pueblo. I need to know something about everything, because I've got to be able to mentor people from a perspective of what's going on today, not what was going on 10 years ago when I was an active agent.
Yep, I agree. I mean, if you have a license in a state, it'd behoove you to learn all the areas of the state if you can and just drive there, because some areas of the state have higher income areas than, like, I don't know Pueblo. I only know Pueblo because of the Undercover Billionaire with Grant Cardone. You know what I mean? So I never knew it before that. So when you mentioned it, I was like, oh, I know that place. But I mean, a place like Pueblo versus like Colorado Springs, you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
There's two different markets. So, I mean, but you just didn't turn a deal down and you went to Pueblo, and who knows what that relationship could turn into when you go to that city and meet other people if you do a good job. You know what I mean?
Now, that's exactly right. And so, I like what I do. So that's the other big piece.
I always tell people, I think real estate is one of the best things that anyone can do, because it's always changing. There's always, to me, there's never been a deal that has been similar. There's always something different with real estate. Every deal, every transaction is going to be different. So it's not boring. People would probably think real estate is boring. To me, it's not boring. I don't know how you feel about it, but to me, it's just, you know what I mean?
I mean, I love what I do, Andre. Mm-hmm. It's the reason I get up in the morning. It's the reason I do all this, is because I love helping people. I love showing houses. I enjoy that. My day can start out in one direction and it could end up in a completely different place, right? And I enjoy that piece of this job. I tell people who are interviewing to be agents that, you know, if you don't love being in your car and you don't love being on your cell phone, this is absolutely not the job for you, because those are the two things that you need to embrace in order to be successful here.
So with you, I know we talked earlier, you were trying to transition. So two things. You obviously think wholesaling is the number one way to get into real estate. I think, in my opinion right now, I don't know if this market is a fix and flip market, in my opinion. I think it could be a wholesale market, but what would be your advice to someone trying to get into real estate? I think wholesaling is the number one way to go.
So I think it, yeah, I would agree. If you are dipping your toe into real estate and you're not sure how to do it, I think wholesaling is a great place to start, because if you start trying to do this, buying a property and fixing and flipping. So I have a couple that I know, she's a real estate agent. He's an agent as well, but he works another full-time job. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to fix and flip a property here about 4 months ago. They bought it, got it under contract, did the renovation. Everything was on timetable, right? Everything mm-hmm. was on timetable and under budget. They were cooking. Oh. They were going to make maybe $20,000 at the end of the deal. Well, when they did the inspection, when they went under contract for the end buyer, they found out that there was a $14,000 sewer problem that nobody had identified before. And so they literally watched almost all of their profit walk out the door. They didn't make 20. When everything was said and done, they basically broke even when you calculate in their time. And if you're a brand new, and they're agents, right? So they're making good money where that didn't sink them. Mm-hmm. But if you're an individual who doesn't, you know, you work a W-2 job, you make $18, $25 an hour, and that's your first foray into real estate, your risk level is very high.
Yep.
Where if you do wholesaling, you maintain that lower risk level, and then you get familiar with markets, you get familiar how houses look. And then when you do run into that really good fix and flip opportunity, you move on the best opportunities only, and it allows you to insulate yourself from what is otherwise an extremely high risk level. And so I would be cautious about, if you're not very familiar with real estate, construction costs, understanding all aspects of a deal, understanding how to underwrite it and how to budget it, that, you know, start out with something that's lower risk just to be able to get yourself, you know, some cash in the bank where, if something does happen, you're insulated from failure, as opposed to, you know, writing the check and being exposed to anything going wrong, completely sinking your future.
I got a book called The Real Estate Investing Diet, and I talk about that in the book. And I'm like, when you first get into real estate, if you just try to hop into flipping and you don't have the capital, just like you just said, I mean, as a lender, I've, you know, helped people get into real estate. And they don't have the extra capital. So then they're stuck, and then they can't carry the mortgage. And so then the house ends up going into foreclosure. Even now, to piggyback off what you're saying, a flip that I'm doing, we got into it. The entire bathroom needed to be replaced, $5,000. 2 days before closing, the water heater went out, right? And then the steps in the back. Then the inspector comes, and then he finds other things wrong with the HVAC. And then the panel has to be replaced. So you go from thinking you're going to make $50,000 or $60,000 down to like $20,000, or you're breaking even because this comes up. So like, if you don't have the extra capital available, because maybe you worked for 15 years and now you saved up that money to maybe put the 10% or 15% down, you might not have the extra capital at the end when the buyer is like, oh, I want you to fix this, because the buyer is going to always have a list. I don't know any buyer who's ever walked into a house who didn't want anything, right? They always want something. So when you get in there, you get all of these, and then like, you just never know when you look at a house, the inside the wall could be termites. There could be so many different things that people have no idea about, right? And so I always say wholesaling, to me, I tell people you can quit your job in 90 days. And I think wholesaling is the way to do that, because like you mentioned, you can make $5,000 or $10,000 off one wholesale deal. I did a wholesale deal in 30 minutes and I made 15 grand. If my monthly expenses are $5,000 a month, I technically could walk away from my job if I had one at that time, because either I walk away with that 15 grand because I have it in the bank and it'll carry me over for the 3 months, or I can do that flip and then have two or three more in the pipeline where one wholesale deal might be $5,000, one might be $2,000, one might be $10,000. Now I have the cushion for the 3 months, and now I just added to that. So, right, you're supposed to have 6 months of expenses in the bank before, in my opinion, before you take off, or more if you're trying to quit your job. But as long as you know you have 6 months of cushion and you know you have this system down with wholesaling, you could potentially quit your job in 60 days and 90 days if you do something like what we're talking about with wholesaling. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when someone's getting ready to quit their job, you need to have not just the money in place, but something that you're talking about is the process to duplicate the procedures, right?
Correct.
So you got to really make sure that what you did wasn't a one-off.
Correct.
But it was something that is duplicatable on a regular basis. And I think a lot of people make that jump too early.
Right.
And so I think, you know, yeah, 6 months worth of money in the bank is perfect, but make sure you've got 6 months worth of deals in the pipeline
exactly.
as well. Like you have some type of process in place that allows you. And look, I'm way more accepting of risk than the average person.
Right. Same.
I'd probably jump before anybody else would jump. I was a paratrooper, right? Like I've jumped out of a plane at, you know, 1500 feet in the dead of night, jumped out of a plane at 800 feet in the dead of night, right? Like I'm good with it. But I think if you're the average individual out there and you've got to have a plan in place and you've got to have some capital, and you definitely, if you're looking out for your family, it's the best way to do things is get yourself into real estate investing, because it's the one thing that, you know, they're not making any more land. There kind of is what there is, but you've got to have money and a plan and a repeatable process in order to be able to make that jump.
In the benefit of wholesaling, you don't need any money. All you need is sweat equity. All you need to do is be able to find deals. So people always think you got to have a lot of money to make money, or you got to have money to get into real estate. And these are like some of the biggest myths ever because of what we're just explaining right now. I mean, when I got into real estate, I was using Zillow and finding leads. You know what I mean? So I'm not sure how you're finding your deals, but I mean, if you're finding deals through scrubbing leads and making phone calls, and you take that lead and you get it on the contract and go to a real estate investment club or go on investbar.com to sell your property, or there's 1,000 different portals to sell properties. All you have to do is put the time in. And that could be 5-10 hours a week for you to just put the time in, 2 hours a day for you to search the internet for properties, whether it be for sale by owner. There's 1,000 websites that you can go to find properties to wholesale.
So, absolutely. And, you know, I was talking to the owner of, they run the Colorado Real Estate Investors Group here, Dwan. And she and I were talking the other day, and she was like, she lives up in the mountains in a town called Bailey. And a few years ago, she'd come down into Denver, and her daughter just went through some neighborhoods and did some door knocking and put a deal under contract, made $35,000 on a wholesale deal just by knocking on doors. And it's not that hard. What you do is you drive through a neighborhood and you look for the house that is run down, the house that doesn't have a mowed yard, the house that looks like it's about to go into foreclosure. Go knock on the door. You know, find somebody who's in trouble. And it's not that hard to do. It takes a little bit of time. Like you said, it takes a little bit of sweat, but you can find deals in a million different ways. And I operate in a mindset of abundance, not in a mindset of scarcity. And so I know there's enough deals out there for everybody who wants to do this to be successful.
You hit it on the head, though. The issue that I've seen, because I didn't come from a rich background. I don't know what your background is, but like I didn't come from money. And so you have to figure it out. It's a mindset shift that has to happen. I think a mindset shift has to happen with anybody who's transitioning from being a worker to an entrepreneur. It doesn't matter if you have a $300,000 job at Apple, right? If you're trying to transition from leaving Apple to having your own business, it's a mindset shift. So the biggest issue that I find is that it's the effort and the mindset that people don't think they can do it, or they think that it's like, oh man, it's going to be too hard, or I don't got time, or a thousand different reasons. But it's a mindset shift, like you said, when it comes to getting into real estate.
I get the impression that people think strangers are smarter than they are.
Correct.
And what I mean by that is just that, you know, they see somebody on TV take Grant Cardone, for instance, right? Yeah. Someone might, and nothing against Grant Cardone. I've read his books. He is an extremely intelligent man. I'm not taking anything away from him. But is he a genius?
No.
Or is he somebody that put in a lot of hard work and did the thing that nobody else would do?
Right.
And so it is much easier to do the thing that nobody else would do than it is to be a genius. And you will find that most people who are incredibly successful, look, they're not all Elon Musk. They're not all Warren Buffett's. They're just people who did the things that nobody else was willing to do, and they got things that nobody else got.
Exactly. It's like Grant Cardone, like his story. He was a drug addict. Like he did all of these crazy things and look where he is now. And it's just like he had a mindset shift. Something had to, I always say this, something has to happen for someone to feel like making that change. Everyone has a breaking point. And a lot of times people get into these comfort zones and they never experience that situation that makes them want to change. And so like the people that put in the work, like you said, they did something that somebody else didn't want to do. And they also get to live a lifestyle that those other people don't get to live because of what happened, right?
Yeah, I don't know who said it first, but it's been around a long time. One of my favorite sayings is, obstacles are what you see when you take your eyes off the goal, right? So everybody makes up excuses. I can't because of this or that or whatever. And those are, you know, everything to me other than achieving the goal is just an excuse in your way. Exactly. And the other one that I hear a lot, and I don't know where it started, is you got to get comfortable being uncomfortable.
Yep.
Once you're comfortable being uncomfortable, you're gonna find that your success grows exponentially, because most things happen when you do the thing that you're fearful of. And I think there is a huge confusion in society between the hazard caution response in your brain and the fear response in your brain. Mm-hmm. So, you know, walking into a street of oncoming traffic, your brain stopping you from doing that, that's a hazard caution, right? That's a real thing that your brain's like, no, that's going to cause bodily harm. Not saying something or not picking up the phone, that's a fear caution. And you should not move through hazard. You should be very patient when moving through a hazard response, but you should 100% of the time move through a fear response, because that fear response is simply your body telling you, I've never done this before. I don't know what it looks like on the other side. And you're going to find that most of the time on the other side, you're fine. And it's actually a better situation than you were in prior.
It's funny you said that fear response, because Will Smith, he was scared to skydive, right? And he was like, oh my God. Like, and I was the same way. I was so scared to skydive. On the way up, I was just like, what am I doing? But he said the same thing. I think he said, on the other side of fear, I think he said there's bliss or something like that. The biggest fear that I had was jumping out of a plane in my life. And then when I went up there and I jumped, it was just like the most amazing thing ever. And that's kind of what I want to do. Anywhere I go, any country I go to, I want to see if I can skydive there, if it's safe. Because you know what? On the other side of me skydiving, that's like it opened up another, I don't know how to explain it, but it just opens up another neural pathway in your brain for you to be like, my biggest fear ended up being my greatest opportunity for me as far as like changing my entire lifestyle and my mindset, because from that, it got me to where I am today. And it could be something else for someone, you know what I mean? But for me, when I did the leap of skydiving and I didn't die, I was just like, I can do anything at this point in time, because my biggest fear, I just overcame it.
No, I get it. I'm a former paratrooper who's terrified of heights, right? It's 100% reality. If you do something that you're really afraid of, and you, like you said, you'll break you'll reform a neural pathway. Correct. And it will make you open up your mind into a way that says, look, there is value in my body telling me that there's something that I should be cautious of. There is way more value in me overcoming the fear response, because once you push through fear, you start to realize that fear isn't usually founded. Like, it's usually not Michael Myers on the other side of the door with a knife. It's usually a tree scratching against the window, right? Like, mm-hmm. Very rarely is fear warranted. And, you know, you're usually in a very particular situation when it is. So people just have to, you got to be willing to do those things. And once you are, then, you know, you end up in a situation where you're like me, where you're probably a little too quick to jump.
But I'm the same way you though. Like, I'm just, it just opens you up to be like, nothing is impossible, right? At least that's how I feel. I feel like I can do anything within physical ability. And with my mind, I'm going to do it, right? Just because of that experience with me overcoming skydiving. Now I'm like, what? That's nothing. I can do that. That's easy. And then you couldn't find out the things that you thought were really hard are extremely easy. They're really simple. It's just like, why was I so scared to do this for so long?
I've said it before. I feel like I could operate on somebody's brain with the right training. Yep. Does anybody want me operating on their brain? No, probably nobody wants me operating on their brain. But in my head, I'm like, yeah, I could do that. Just show me what I got to do.
Exactly. Give me like an hour and a handbook. I'm almost positive I could do it.
Exactly.
But that's how you get to that level of where you're like, you know what? You really feel like you can do anything, which is what I think people need to understand. Yeah, I mean, I think anybody, as long as you're not going to die from doing it, whatever your biggest fear is, try it. Attempt, and if you overcome it, see what that does for the rest of your life.
Even failing at it will change your attitude about Correct. Things. Failure is amazing. I hate when people say failure is not an option. Failure is absolutely an option, and failure being an option is what helps drive you to be successful, because if you don't plan on failure being an option, you won't do the things that are necessary to safeguard you from failure as Correct. You're moving forward. Where if you know you can fail, you act very differently. Like you work Right. harder, you make the extra phone calls, you go out and door knock. People that say failure is not an option typically are not successful, because they don't have that drive behind them that says, if I don't do the work, I know what's going to happen to me, right? Like I drive past homeless people and I always think like, I never want that to be me. So I'm going to work a 15, 16 hour day today. Mm-hmm. You know, all of those, that's why I just constantly remind myself that failure can happen. I failed before and I've learned a lot from failure. It's not necessarily the worst thing ever. I think people who say failure is not an option tend to be people who are not that successful, because they don't have that drive of what could happen if they're not able to accomplish.
Not
what
only
they
that,
seek out to
they're
do.
Not even. If you're not failing, that means you're not trying, right? Nobody exactly. is perfect at everything. And if you think you're perfect at everything, or you don't want to attempt something because you might fail, then for one, you're not going to learn anything. But in addition to that, I mean, just that means you're not attempting to do anything. So your life can't change if you're not failing at something, because you're not going to jump out here and hit a home run your first time at bat. Like, it just doesn't Absolutely. Work like that. So you gotta fail. It's like when you're training or lifting weights, your muscles have to go to muscle failure in order to grow. That's just what it is, right? That's just a part of like how things operate, which you got to be failing at it in order for you to learn, grow, or anything like that. So real quick, let's jump into moving into multifamily. And then I want to get a good idea of like what got you to the mindset of where you're at right now. But first, moving to multifamily. What made you want to move to multifamily from wholesaling?
So just being around the mastermind group, and you know, we talked about Javier's group's $1 billion boardroom, and I think you've been on his podcast.
Yep.
Being around folks in that mastermind has opened my mind as to what is possible. And I watch these folks buy and sell apartment complexes and multifamily units and commercial properties, and I realize that that's really the next level to what I'm doing. And so that is, and I'm probably, you know, 12 to 18 months out. And I say 12 to 18 months, but if an opportunity comes before then, I'm going to jump on it. But that's where I'm moving in my career.
Yeah. And I tell people all the time, people love the fix and flip because of the TV show, HGTV. You know what I mean? But there's nothing better than being able to have 6 or 7 doors and then 2 people move out and the mortgage is still getting paid and you're not paying it, right? When you have a single Right. family home, if that person leaves, it sucks to carry your mortgage. And if you have a couple rental properties and they're vacant, you got to carry your living and 3 other people's living, basically, right? Because no one's in those houses to be able to pay the mortgages. So when you have mostly families, the CapEx, you either have to pay that, but like the only other side of the capital expenditures, you can increase the value to where you can do a cash out refinance and put out way more money than you could from a single family home.
Yeah, absolutely.
My last question for you is, what books do you recommend? What got you to the level of where you are as far as mindset and believing the way you believe?
Yeah. So The Prince by Machiavelli, 48 Laws of Power, Grant Cardone's The 10X Rule, Jeb Blunt, anything by Jeb Blunt, either Objections or Fanatical Prospecting, Split the Difference by Chris Voss. I think those are all books that are required reading.
He gave you some jewels, guys. Like, I mean, I definitely know 10X is a great book. You know what I mean? Anything, because Grant is just a master marketer, right? So anything that he touches, 100%. He spools it, man. He does great things. So, you know, 10X Rule is a good book, because that's kind of what you should be doing with anything that you do. Anything that you do, you should be trying to be the best at whatever that is, right? Doesn't matter if you shine in shoes, like you got to be the best at whatever it is, because that's how you get to the next level in life and in real estate. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. And you should be reading. You should be reading books I didn't even mention, right? Like if reading is the, you know, it's free education or very cheap education. I use Audible a lot. I'm in my car a lot. I listen as much as I can.
Scott, man, thank you for coming on and dropping these jewels. And is there any way that people can reach you for anything that you're working on? I don't know if you have like a mentorship program or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, you can reach me on my cell phone, 720-252-7037. You can reach me by email, scott@youfirst, and it's Y-O-U, the number one, S like Sam, T like Tom.com. So scott@youfirst.com. And I'm always available. It's never a bother. You guys can call me anytime. And if I don't know something, I probably know somebody that does know it. So, you know, I like to solve problems.
Scott, thank you again for coming on. And I want to have you on the roundtable. We have an Investing Uncensored roundtable where we bring on 3 to 4 guests and we just go around and we ask questions in like a fire off session, 30 seconds to a minute to answer the question. So hopefully we can have you on that Investing Uncensored roundtable.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. Thanks for having me on, Andre. This is an amazing time.
Thank you, Scott.